So this sermon is going to be mostly a Bible study. That means I'm going to want to look at the texts and interesting, important things I see in those texts. Some of those texts I'll be projecting up here for you. At least Frank will be doing it for me up there on the screens. If you would like to open your Bibles, you will be able to follow along, I think, with some of this. But looking at the text first, and then having looked at what the scriptures are saying, then to look at least briefly at our lives as we try to be followers of Jesus in the way that we live. So I want to look first at John 10 and at verse 11, when Jesus says, one of the ways he says, I am, there are a variety of things he says, he says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. So this is verse 11, but he will say it again in verse 14. And in both those places, as Jesus says, he lays down his life for the sheep, we are very clear about the gift he gave us, his death on a cross. He has laid down his life for us. So with this in mind, partner that up with things we know about shepherds. We could especially think of the reference we know and love from Psalm 23, a version of which we just sang. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I'll have everything that I need because of the shepherd who is providing for me. Shepherds take care of the sheep. As Tim talked about, they provide for them food and water. In the Psalm 23, they talk about green pastures and still waters. Those are safe places to get what sheep need for their lives. And shepherds provide for their protection. I love to go to the story of David, young David, being a shepherd. And when he went, remember, he goes out to fight the giant whose name is Goliath, right? Okay, so how old do we think David is about this time? Maybe 16, 17, maybe 13, 14. He was young. We don't know, and he's probably a little bit scrawny, as boys are at that age. They haven't, you know, bulked up yet, right? At any rate, the king wants to know who this champion is that's offered to go out and fight the giant, so they bring David to King Saul. Saul looks him over and says, you are too young to do this, buddy. And David says this to the king in 1 Samuel chapter 17. David says to Saul, I used to keep sheep for my father. And whenever a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went after it and I struck it down, rescuing the lamb from its mouth. And if it, the lion or the bear, turned against me, I would catch it by the jaw and strike it down and kill it. I have killed both lions and bears. You see, as a shepherd, David protected the sheep. And he goes on to proclaim a sturdy faith in God. The Lord who saved me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of this Philistine. Shepherds care for the sheep. Jesus is the good shepherd, our good shepherd. He cares for us. He promises to lay down his life for us. So keep that in mind, that passage, John 10, Jesus, the good shepherd, laying down his life for us. Now, the other passage is John 21. A preacher, a theologian, poet, and songwriter named Tom Troger, who, by the way, is Lutheran, we'll allow that. He's a good guy. I've met him. I met him in Montreat. So if you've been to Montreat, you're at least partly Presbyterian anyway. So Tom Troger writes some really helpful commentary on this passage. One of the things he says is the main part of the Gospel of John, the fourth Gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, the fourth one is John. The main part of the Gospel of John ended with chapter 20. At that point, the women have found the tomb empty. Jesus has appeared to the disciples and comes back and appears to them with Thomas. And here are the verses at the end of chapter 20. The writer of the fourth gospel says, "And Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, these things are written, that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and through believing you may have life in his name." That sounds like a good ending, doesn't it? Sounds like he's wrapped it up. Well, then there's chapter 21. And Tom Troger calls that the epilogue. He says, we've already had the main story. Now here's an epilogue. I like epilogues. I like to read. And sometimes I'm not really ready for the book to end. What happens next? They give you an epilogue. So the story in chapter 21 is a story we've been talking about. Peter going fishing, remember? And the other disciples going with him. And then Jesus appears on the beach instructing them on how to catch the fish, and then he fixes them breakfast. So look at what the text says Jesus is doing here in chapter 21. It begins this way. After these things, after what you've heard about in the main part of the book in chapter 20, after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. Now I'll skip along a little bit, and it says, just after daybreak, Peter and the disciples have gone fishing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to them, I can picture him calling out, children, do you have any fish? They say, no, no fish. Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. So when they had gone ashore, there's a bit of a break, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, my favorite words of all time, come and have breakfast. My husband says I get up in order to eat breakfast. Imagine somebody fixing breakfast for you. That's great. Imagine it being Jesus that fixes breakfast for you. Wow. So Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them. Picture him breaking the bread. He took the bread and he gave it to them, and he did the same with the fish. This was now, the writer says, the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. Well, notice some interesting things about this passage. Here is Jesus providing for the people, fixing them breakfast, fish and bread cooked over a fire on the beach. I can almost smell it. Delicious. It reminds us of his feeding the 5,000. Where they had a few loaves and a few fish, and he fed the whole multitude. It reminds us of the Lord's Supper that we share together in the church, the bread and the cup, Jesus providing for and feeding the people like a shepherd provides for the sheep, right? This is one of the pictures of Jesus doing what he does because he is the good shepherd. Notice another thing. Jesus has guided their fishing. I love what Tom Troger says about this. The disciples never catch a fish in any of the Gospels without the help of Jesus. You know what? I really never thought about that till Tom Troger pointed it out. Here are these guys. They're fishermen, right? By trade, they are fishermen. But in the stories in the Bible, they never catch a fish unless Jesus is there to tell them how to do it. Now, that's astonishing. So in this passage, our buddy Peter, who's so ashamed of denying that he even knew Jesus, is going to have this crucial conversation with Jesus. But before I get into that, I want to point out something else. Think about this. It's fascinating when the writers in the Bible give us details. This author tells us about that fire on the beach. The New Revised Standard Version calls it a charcoal fire. Picture you out there in your backyard dumping out the charcoals, right? Okay, a charcoal fire. Well, I looked this up. In the Gospel of John, there are only two charcoal fires. In fact, in all the Gospels, there are only two charcoal fires. In fact, in all the New Testament, there are only two charcoal fires. And here they are. This one where Jesus is cooking them breakfast on the beach, and one more. Listen to this in John 18. The woman said to Peter, "You are not also one of the man's disciples, are you?" And he said, "I'm not." Now the slaves and the police had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing around it and warming themselves. Peter also was standing with them and warming himself. There was a charcoal fire there when and where Peter denied three times knowing Jesus. The writer of this story, my friends, in this epilogue, is using the detail of the charcoal fire to draw a connecting line between that story in John 18 and this one in John 21. He doesn't want us to miss it. He wants us to know he isn't missing it, that what happened when Peter denied Jesus three times is connected to what happens with Peter and Jesus on this beach. Jesus is cooking breakfast for the disciples, and he's going to feed them. And then he'll call Peter to him, and he asks three times if Peter loves him. "Peter, do you love me?" "Peter, son of John," Simon Barjona, "do you love me?" There's no mistake who he's talking about. He's clarified it. Jenny Simmons Ellis, who grew up in Jacksonville, daughter of Ballard and Dee Dee Simmons, "do you love me?" What words would Jesus use if he asks you, "Do you love me?" He asks Peter, "Do you love me? Lord, you know that I love you." He asks him three times, "Do you love me more than these? More than all these other people? Do you love me?" It hurts Peter's feelings because he hasn't yet connected those three denials, "No, I don't even know this Jesus," with "I love you. I denied I knew you, but really I love you. I love you." Jesus says to Peter, "Feed my lambs. Tend my sheep. Feed my sheep." In spite of the mess that Peter has made of his faith and his discipleship, Jesus has a job for him to do, an important job, to be a shepherd, to feed and tend the lambs and the sheep. Marsha, I should have brought a lamb in here today, don't you think? We brought the chicks and rabbits, bunnies, and all over to see, for the children to see the other day. We could have brought in a lamb. Jesus has a job for Peter to do. And that job is a job like Jesus himself, who is the good shepherd. So Peter is instructed to feed and tend the sheep, to do the work of a shepherd. Tom Troger says, "If we have wrongly concluded that Christ's abundant generosity belongs to the past and not the present, then this epilogue in John 21 reminds us, gives witness, that the risen Christ continues to bless and feed us. If we have wrongly concluded that Christ's abundant generosity belongs to the past and not the present, then this story reminds us that the risen Christ continues to bless and feed us. And Troger goes on to say, the traditions of the disciple have nothing to show, the traditions of the disciples having nothing to show for their labors until Christ guided them. That's what we're seeing. They can't catch fish without Jesus showing them. They couldn't feed the 5,000 until they brought the fish and bread to Jesus to bless and break and distribute, and there was more than enough. If you are going to fulfill the mission, my friends, entrusted to you, you will need the risen Christ guiding and feeding you first. That's what we see here in John 21 as Jesus calls the disciples to the beach and feeds them bread and fish. Yesterday, more than 30 of you joined me here for 3 hours of thinking and discussing and dreaming about the mission of this church. And I know that the session will be taking that work and building on it, fleshing it out in, well, today and in the months to come. But what I will lift up for you today is that the group yesterday identified 3 areas of work for an ongoing focus, things they considered of vital importance to the life and work of the church. And those 3 things were worship and mission and outreach. You will be hearing about those more and more as time unfolds, but it seems to me that we will need to be like the disciples, asking Jesus to guide us in what we do in mission and outreach and worship, and that we will ask Jesus to guide us and bless both our intentions and our efforts, just as he blessed the intentions and efforts of the disciples. And that applies not only to our work as a church, but it also applies to how we live our lives as the people of faith. In the work you each do at home and in the community and in your jobs, and in the ways you live out your relationships and speak out about what you believe to be true. Well, are we strong leaders? Not necessarily. Like Thomas, we have our doubts at times. Like Peter, we speak and sometimes act far too soon. We make messes of things. But Jesus stands graciously on the beach, ready to receive us, to guide our efforts, to feed and forgive us. He just wants us to love him and to feed his lambs. I know that, like me, you heard the story this week of the Southwest Airlines flight whose engine broke up because a fan blade sheared off and spun off and broke the whole engine apart. One person died. Others were injured. And the story of that pilot is amazing. Now, I haven't ever flown a plane. I've flown in a few planes. But imagine a plane with 2 engines flying now with only one of them, and what that's doing to the balance of the plane and its steering capacity. Furthermore, it has a window open, broken open, and parts of the plane broken away. Pilot Tammy Jo Schultz, a Navy-trained veteran pilot, flew that crippled plane for 20 minutes to a place where she could land it safely, the closest place on their route. And as they arrived in Philadelphia, the passengers told how they braced for a crash landing, some of them expecting to die on impact. And some of them later describe that landing as incredibly smooth, almost gentle, as that pilot, Tammy Jo Schultz, set that plane down on a runway. I read a description, as probably you did, of Tammy Jo Schultz. Turns out she had always wanted to fly and had loved to fly. And her mother said, Tammy Jo is a devout Christian. And I don't consider that a trivial detail. Because as Christians, we aren't always acting like shepherds feeding sheep. We might be teaching third graders, or kindergartners, or high school students, or working a computer, or walking around a public store, or building, or designing. There are all kinds of things people do who are devout Christians. But I think Pilot Schultz last week was feeding Jesus' lambs and caring for Jesus' sheep as she did what she is and was trained to do, landing an airplane that was crippled in every other way. What are our passions and our gifts? The question, what are the passions and gifts of this church, and what is it equipped and positioned to do? And how can we do those things as shepherds for Jesus? Because after all, he is the good shepherd for us, and he has asked us to feed his lambs. What are our passions and gifts? What are my passions and your passions, our gifts as individuals? What are we in a position to do, and how can we do those things as a shepherd for Jesus? Because in fact, you see, he is my shepherd, our shepherd, and he asks us to tend his sheep. Let us pray.